Welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. And so there I was this morning, scrolling through my social media, you know, to see what's moving the algorithms, what people are reading and saying, learning how the Trump regime and MAGA Republicans continue to work for and provide cover for the Epstein class through fascism, and the moral and the intestinal fortitude of the millions of working class Americans fighting back to not just defeat the Epstein class's fascism, but to pave a path to empower all working class people and families in the future. And then I see a picture scroll across my screen showing Bobby Kennedy Jr. and Kid Rock, both shirtless, with Kennedy riding a stationary bike while Kid Rock is doing push-ups in what appears to be some kind of a sauna. Now, they posted the picture believing that what America really needed to see at that very moment was their naked torsos. Look, I'm not sure that's what I needed to see first thing in the morning. No, I can tell you for certain it wasn't. Look, I don't get into people's interests or likes or kinks, but MAGA men, looking at Kid Rock and Robert Kennedy Jr.'s nipples first thing in the morning, is that what you're into? Again, I'm not judging, but I guess I'm learning that fawning at their bodies, again, first thing in the morning, is what is known as alpha MAGA male energy? Okay. By the way, while some of these MAGA bros were gazing at old men nipples, I saw a clip last week where Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum said that her country has seen an increase in measles cases because, and this is a quote, it came mainly from the United States. It came mainly from the United States. Now, I remember years ago when I was on the radio and I once interviewed some MAGA woman nut job. At that time, she called herself a Tea Partier then, if you recall back in those days. But one of the main reasons she was advocating that we had to close the border down and allow no immigrants into the country south of the border is because, actually, I don't even know if it was south of the border. I think it was just all immigrants in general. But the main reason we had to close our borders completely is because of the diseases they'd bring over. I'm sure many of you have encountered the same kinds of people throughout your lives. And dear leader Trump himself always tells us how immigrants bring crime, violence, and disease. Now, there's no cure for measles, but we discovered a vaccine for it years and years ago. And that's due to science, ingenuity, education, and funding. Thanks to all that, we eradicated measles by the year 2000. Do you know how many lives were lost? Families were destroyed. Local economies were destroyed. Family homes were gone forever due to measles. Can you imagine Americans who had to live through and live with the disease all around them some 100 years ago? Can you imagine what they would have thought had there been a vaccine for them to use? I mean, hell, many Americans were alive when vaccines for the measles were a dream, and then later in their lives got to take the vaccine. And it worked. When did we become so freaking stupid? You know, I love to talk to that MAGA lady and many of her ilk and ask her today, yeah, you know, that whole we've got to stop immigrants from coming here because they'll spread disease thing. Yeah, that was nothing but a racist ploy, wasn't it? Since you guys apparently don't mind diseases spreading across the country anymore. You don't want vaccines. We've got the highest measles count in the country since 1991, and it has spread to 23 states, including Michigan. But South Carolina is leading the way, and children are the group in South Carolina who's getting measles the most. Well done, indeed. Reuters reported this week that Americans logged over 1,000 measles cases in the first 3 weeks of this year. That's about a 43-fold jump versus the same window in 2025. So while Robert Kennedy Jr., who's head of the Health and Human Services Department, is showing off his oiled nipples for the MAGA cult, more and more Americans are getting measles because, thanks to lies and conspiracy theories pushed forward by Kennedy, less people are getting the measles vaccine. But I'm told that's supposedly making America healthy again. And while Michigan's Democratic Senators Gary Peters and Alyssa Slotkin have inexplicably voted to confirm a handful of the Trump regime's cabinet, they at least each voted against Kennedy. And look, while I agree with Kennedy and I think the science is showing that processed foods aren't the best for you, not eating processed foods and working out shirtless with Kid Rock in a sauna isn't going to protect you from measles, which kills people, you know, by the way. And who would have thought the same regime, the same Dear Leader Trump regime, which, you know, a few years ago pushed the country to get back to work in the middle of a pandemic in which millions of people had died as there was no vaccine yet, who would have thought that part two of his regime would bring back other diseases that were thought to be gone for good? I mean, if only people would have known, right? leftoflansing@gmail.com is the best way to reach me. Join Left of Lansing on Patreon as well. Please subscribe on Patreon so that way you can get some write-ups and thoughts of mine. And I'll start including some videos there that you can't get anywhere else. And I have to make this announcement too. I have canceled leftoflansing.com. I was never really happy with the site. Never found it to be real user-friendly, nor was it really administrator-friendly. So there's no more leftoflansing.com. But you can still get a full archive of the show on Left of Lansing's Patreon page. Please subscribe there if you can. And as always, like and subscribe to the show on the YouTube, and also subscribe and give a good 5-star review of the show wherever you are listening to this podcast. Coming up here in a few moments, you'll want to stick around because I'll be joined by progressive Democratic candidate for the United States Senate, Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, here in just a few moments, okay? So stick around for that. Because you probably remember that I announced my support a few weeks ago for his campaign to become our next United States Senator. That Senate seat is opening up as Gary Peters is retiring. Now, in this Democratic primary race for that U.S. Senate seat, Dr. Abdul is taking on centrist corporate Congresswoman Haley Stevens and State Senator Mallory McMorrow in what appears to be a close race, I think with around 30% of Michiganders in a recent poll saying that they haven't yet made up their minds on this one. But it's a race that'll signal to everyone in Michigan and across the country where base voters want Democrats to be going into those 2026 elections. And it's not real breaking news here to start off that Haley Stevens is collecting all kinds of cash from pro-Israeli lobbying PACs. PACs that would like your tax dollars and my tax dollars, our tax dollars, to continue to pay for Israel's genocide and also for other wars that Israel's corrupt right-wing and genocidal government keeps pressing the United States to fund, like, you know, a war maybe with Iran, for example. Wouldn't that be just lovely? And like Dear Leader Trump and his regime, Haley Stevens' answer to Israel when it demands and wants more and more money from working class taxpayers is, "How much do you need, dear Netanyahu and Israel? How much do you need? We'll give it to you. No strings attached." Michigan Advance's Ben Solis reported a couple of months ago how Haley Stevens was raking in cash from pro-Israeli lobbyists, the group known as the Democratic Majority for Israel, or DMFI, endorsed Haley Stevens, saying that she stood firm against extremism, anti-Semitism, and efforts to undermine America's alliances. I think most people stand firm against extremism and anti-Semitism, especially those of us on the left, unless you're the Trump regime where Dear Leader wined and dined with Nazi podcaster Nick Fuentes. But the press can't really talk about that anymore. It was so long ago. Same with when Dear Leader shared a racist video depicting Michelle and Barack Obama as apes. I mean, that was just over a week and a half ago, but hey, it's down the memory hole. We just keep moving on. But I digress. No, what the DMFI is saying there is that any, and I mean any, criticism towards the Netanyahu-Israeli government is anti-Semitism. That is what they are saying. Now, those of us with working brain cells knows that not to be the case. And Stevens said in a statement that in the Senate, that she'd keep fighting to protect our democracy, support Israel's security, ensure the ceasefire holds in Gaza, and deliver for Michiganders in every corner of the state. Support Israel's security? I mean, that means billions and billions of more of our tax dollars to pay for Israel's continued bombing and killings of Palestinians. That's not how I want my tax dollars being used. And remember that. Please remember that the next time you hear those hand-wringing pundits out there as they'll tell us how we can't do Medicare for All or universal child care because of the debt. Oh, but Israel will just give you more money. And when Ryan Grimm was still with The Intercept back in 2022, he wrote a story on the influence of the DMFI, saying, while DMFI is ostensibly organized around the politics of Israel in practice, it has become a weapon wielded by the party's centrist faction against its progressive wing. That is who Haley Stevens is supporting. That is who she is representing. Now, Dr. Abdullah Syed has always called Israel's actions in Gaza to be what it has always clearly been, a genocide. And he doesn't want American taxpayer money being used for Israel's war. And for her part, Mallory McMorrow took her time, but eventually called Israel's actions a genocide. But while Dr. Abdul calls for ICE to be abolished, both Stevens and McMorrow say it ought to be reformed, you know, maybe redecorated a little bit. And neither of them is calling for Medicare for All, unlike Dr. Abdul. So stick around because Dr. Abdul here will be coming up here in just a moment. Oh, last week I did tell everyone that Livingston County progressive fighter Casey Helton, good friend of the show, would be joining us here this week. Unfortunately, Casey came down with an awful cold this week and promised that she'll be back on in the near future. And, you know, as I'm recovering from a nasty sinus infection myself, I understand how she's feeling. So get better, Casey, and we'll have you on here soon. I needed to bring this up, this little news bit, if you don't mind featuring Haley Stevens, because she joined another centrist Michigan Democratic Congresswoman, Hillary Scolton of Grand Rapids, as they toured the North Lake Processing Center in Baldwin. I mean, that's what it's called, this processing center or concentration camp, as I call it, and many of us call it, has around 1,500 people in it, making it the largest concentration camp in the Midwest, according to Michigan Advance's Kyle Davidson. Now, a man died inside that concentration camp a few months ago, but the Trump regime's Homeland Security won't disclose exactly how he died because the regime claims the investigation is continuing. Now, why don't I believe that? Of course, Stevens and Scolton didn't get any answers, and they said that they keep pressing for those answers, though. But then there was this odd statement from Haley Stevens, and I'm still confused exactly as to what kind of point she was trying to make here. Listen.
Of note, there are female leadership here. There's female leadership, and there are women who walked with us today and explained on the intake process how important it is to treat people with humanity. And that obviously really stuck out to me because some of the things that we are witnessing before our eyes in our neighborhoods, in our streets, is really a lack of humanity.
So since this facility, as she calls it, has solid female leadership, that kind of makes it cool. A good friend of the show, Amanda Mercer, founder of Northwest Michigan for Reproductive Freedom, tweeted, so Stevens is totally chill with this concentration camp because hashtag girl boss. Well done. Now, Stevens' staff later told Michigan Advance that Stevens really was talking about female detainees who said they were relieved that there were female guards doing the intake at this facility. She failed the moment in highlighting the unconstitutionality of the Trump regime's kidnapping and disappearance program and how we don't need and should not fund concentration camps. It doesn't have to be that hard, Democrats. You're not fighting back. This is why voters are frustrated with Democrats and why Democrats have low approval numbers. Stop trying to sound diplomatic. Stop trying to sound centrist or hailing the fact that women are running concentration camps. How is that going to inspire voters to go on the Democratic side? There was a New York Times story this week in which they interviewed a handful of upset and edgy Democratic voters across the country. And when asked to describe the Democratic Party, here's how these voters describe them, okay? Listen. Spineless, afraid, paralyzed, incompetent, sellouts who helped create this mess, no cojones. Well, yeah. And as one Michigan Democrat who described himself as 33 years old, black, and a career coach said, immobilized. Yeah, I like that one. Immobilized. The working class is fed up with this centrist corporatist game being played by Democratic Party leaders who simply refuse to take the battle to the Epstein class while then at the same time making bold changes to help the working class. They're tired of it. This week, the Reverend Jesse Jackson passed away at the age of 84, and I remember his 1988 presidential run, and especially his DNC convention speech that year, and realizing for the first time that there really was someone who not only engaged me as a political speaker, but also explained, you know, how progressive populism can really help and reach all working class Americans. He knew how to communicate that message because, as Jackson said, no matter our backgrounds or geography, the working class shared a common ground. Here's a part of that speech. Listen.
Common ground. Easier said than done. Where do you find common ground? At the point of challenge. This campaign has shown that politics need not be marketed by politicians, packaged by pollsters and pundits. Politics can be a moral arena where people come together to find common ground. We find common ground at the plant gate that closes on workers without notice. We find common ground at the farm auction where a good farmer loses his or her land to bad loans or diminishing markets. Common ground at the schoolyard, where teachers cannot get adequate pay, and students cannot get a scholarship and can't make a loan. Common ground at the hospital admitting room, where somebody tonight is dying because they cannot afford to go upstairs to a bed that's empty, waiting for someone with insurance to get sick. We are a better nation than that. We must do better.
Rest in peace, Jesse Jackson. Coming up, Michigan Senate candidate Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed. You're listening to LOL.
A working class voice for the working class. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If you'd like to tell Pat what you think of the show and maybe even congratulate him for providing podcasting excellence, oh, brother, email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. If you have an idea for a guest or a topic for a future show, email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. We'd like to thank you for listening and for helping spread the progressive message in the Mitten State and beyond. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
As always, you can email me at leftoflansing@gmail.com or leave comments on my social media pages or on the Left of Lansing YouTube page. And thanks again for your views and the comments on the YouTube. And I'm glad that many of you enjoyed last week's talk with Dr. Josh Cowan on how the MAGA Michigan billionaires are continuing their battle to decimate our public schools and teachers unions through their school voucher schemes. Now, meanwhile, I'm not sure you've heard, but we've got some pretty big statewide election races happening this year, I'd say, including an open seat in the United States Senate. And as I've said, the Democratic Party race for that seat is one that'll help, I think, show everyone which direction Democrats will go heading into the November elections, both in Michigan, and it will have ramifications, I think, across the country. Now, on the Republican side, there's Florida Mike Rogers, and, well, we know what he's all about, and we'll talk more about him in the future months. But on the Democratic side, the race to see who will become the party's nominee for that Senate seat is between State Senator Mallory McMorrow from Oakland County, Congresswoman Haley Stevens, who's also from Oakland County, and Ann Arbor's Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, the progressive candidate who's pushing for a bold, progressive, populist campaign representing working-class Michiganders. Now, a few weeks ago, I told you guys that I supported Abdul's campaign for a myriad of reasons, but one of the main reasons is that his campaign is one that is unabashedly pro-worker, pro-healthcare for all, and pro-American. Plus, I think that he's trying to push the Overton window back towards the working class after decades of it being pushed further and further and further to the corporatist right. So without further delay, I'd like to welcome Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed to the show. He's been the health officer and executive director of the Detroit Health Department, director of Wayne County's Department of Health. He ran for governor back in 2018 and is also the author of Medicare for All, A Citizen's Guide. And again, he's running to replace the outgoing Democrat Gary Peters in the United States Senate. Dr. Abdul, thanks so much for taking a little time out to be on Michigan's premier progressive podcast here this week. I appreciate it.
Honored to be with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, no problem. Hey, first of all, when I was doing some research on you, reading some articles a few months ago, I stumbled upon something that I didn't know about you. And so is it true that your mom grew up in Gratiot County? Because that's where we're headquartered.
Yeah, she did. So she grew up in St. Louis. And I actually remember a lot of my childhood summers. We'd go to Crystal Lake in Montcalm County right next door. So that's a part of the state that is near and dear to my family.
Middle of the mitten.
That's right. It's like geographic middle. And the thing that people don't know about Gratiot County is it's like it's full of windmills and arguably the wind-powered capital of the state of Michigan.
That's right, yeah, because if you're just driving up 27 or if you're on 46, yeah, that's how you can tell you're in Gratiot County with all the windmills there, absolutely. Well, listen, I know that, you know, you've been campaigning all across the state, which you also did during your gubernatorial run some 8 years ago. And during your campaign, I know that you've received endorsements from the likes of community organizers like Reverend Horace Sheffield III in Detroit, who is, of course, Mary Sheffield's father, county commissioners from Ingham, Kalamazoo, Isabella, north of us here in Gratiot County. And also you got some community organizers and people from Marquette, the county up in the UP, all throughout the state. So what's been the prevailing, or maybe I should ask, maybe like the recurring concerns and frustrations from working class voters that you've been meeting here across Michigan?
I got to say, it's a privilege to get to do this again. I've been in 75 different cities now, done 230 public events. We go everywhere. We talk to everyone. And I don't do these prim and proper made for social media stops. I go and we have town halls and we take what questions come. Overwhelmingly, the big concern that people have is, I don't know how I'm going to see a doctor when I get sick, and I don't know how I'm going to pay for it if I do. And that is a big reason why I have long been a champion for Medicare for all. In this country, we have $225 billion of medical debt, and that's in large part because we allow private corporations to choke our healthcare system in ways that leave us having to pay more for less and leave us brutally insecure when it comes to the healthcare we need and deserve. And then from there, it's the affordability of everything else. Will I ever be able to have a home? Can I stay in the home that I'm in? I don't know if I can afford a second bag of groceries. I worry about how I'm going to pay for childcare. And for too many folks, they're making decisions about whether or not one of the parents will work. And it's usually women because of the system of our society, or whether or not they should stay home and take care of kids. Like, these are questions that folks shouldn't have to be asking in the richest, most powerful country in the world. Childcare should be free. Healthcare should be free. We have the ability to do it. But what we cannot do is continue to send our money abroad to drop bombs on other people and subsidize genocide and think that somehow we're going to be able to afford what we need here at home. We cannot continue to give ICE a budget that's greater than the budget of the Marines, greater than the budget of the FBI, so that they can terrorize communities that are thousands of miles away from the southern border and think that somehow we're going to be able to afford the basic dignities of a life. And so this is a campaign built on three ideas: get money out of politics, put money in your pocket, pass Medicare for all.
Has the political landscape changed at all since, you know, you ran back in 2018 compared to now?
You probably know this better than me. You're thinking about and talking about Michigan politics every week. But I'll tell you this, it feels very different. When I ran back in 2018, I said something at the time that I think folks were just not ready to hear. And that's that Donald Trump is not himself the disease of our politics. He's just the worst symptom of the disease of our politics. The disease is the system that allows corporations, billionaires, would-be oligarchs to buy and sell politicians in ways that leave them rigging the system against us. It means that we get paid less for the work we do, and we got to pay more for the stuff we have to buy. And you see it in every part of your life. And I think 8 years on, folks are a lot more willing to recognize that, because 8 years on, we're watching as the things that we thought we could take for granted, we no longer can. That one good job that we felt we could work and afford the dignities of our lives, that job is slipping away if it exists at all. And what that job actually commands is not enough to be able to afford everything from a home to a car to insurance to healthcare. And so I think the reality of that, that our system has been rigged, it's been rigged for corporations against the rest of us, and that is what we have to solve. I think the reality of that has become painfully obvious and painfully clear and just plain painful. And solving that has become the key existential goal of our politics. And that's what we're talking about right now.
You know, I read a piece that you wrote in the Guardian, I think it was a couple months ago, back in December, I think. And you argued how it's time for Democrats to start playing offense in terms of our politics, but, you know, especially with health care. It does seem like Democrats for far too long, and it's something that I've been lamenting a lot about here on the show. It seems like they were always fighting to, you know, hold the line, or we've got to defend something, like hold the line to keep the Affordable Care Act together. Only, of course, to watch it just get chipped away, and with cuts to Medicare and Medicaid, like the Trump and Republican Congress passed last year. So when you say it's time to stop playing defense, time to go more on offense, what do you mean exactly?
The D behind your name doesn't mean defense, permanent defense, that we let them ratchet the system further in their direction, and then we just try to figure out what we can say that makes us perfectly inoffensive so we can keep pointing at them and saying how bad they are. It turns out that if you want to win elections, you have to be able to say how great you are. And that means that you got to go out and fight for the things that people need and deserve in their lives. I'm traveling up and down my state and people are telling me I can't afford basic things. I'm worried about whether or not I'm going to be able to work the same job tomorrow that I worked yesterday, and it shouldn't be this hard. And so if you don't have real solutions to those problems and all you're saying is how bad they are, it turns out that folks are just not interested in listening. And what's happening is that they're checking out of our politics. And I think we have a righteous argument to make. You know, too often we give up on our ideals. Donald Trump said something when he came down that hideous escalator that has resonated in people's minds, however untrue it is. If you're out of a job, it's because, well, an immigrant took your job. If you're out of healthcare, immigrant took your healthcare. Out of a home, immigrant took your home. We've got a better argument. If you're out of a job, it's because the corporation probably offshored or automated your job. If you're out of healthcare, we know what the corporations are doing to raise the prices on your healthcare. And if you're out of a home, it's probably because some corporation is speculating on the home that you should have been able to afford. But the problem is Democrats don't say that because too often they're taking money from the very same corporations that are on the wrong side of the problem. I don't take corporate money. I'm the only person in this race who never has and never will, which puts me in a position to actually call out the issues as I see them. And so Democrats have to play to win. And that means fighting righteous fights over guaranteeing healthcare in this country. And while we're at it, let's guarantee childcare and senior care too. We have to fight righteous fights around standing up to corporations and standing up for unions and standing up for small businesses rather than an economy rigged by the biggest businesses. And it means that we have to stand up to get money out of politics in the first place, which is what has corrupted the system so greatly. And so we got an opportunity to fight to win, not just fight not to lose.
What do you say, speaking of jobs, what do you say? Because I'll tell you what, when I used to be in Saginaw Radio for many years and I'd be on the air and I'd be talking about the need for Medicare for All, I would get some calls from listeners and they'd say, Pat, yeah, that sounds all great on paper, but what are you going to tell all those people who are going to lose their jobs who work in, you know, the medical field or medical insurance field and the way the system is right now? So what do you say? I've got to believe that there are voters who come up to you with those same concerns. Like, okay, what happens to some of those people if we move to a Medicare for All system?
Well, I'll tell you this. Right now, about 10% of our population doesn't have regular access to healthcare. Think about how many jobs we could create actually giving them the healthcare that they need and deserve. And right now, right, we are watching as this system is inefficient. People need healthcare and the system does not provide it for them. So Medicare for All would help solve that. On top of that, you're still going to need a lot of that bureaucracy to be able to move files. Medicare does employ people, right? Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, state Medicaid employs people. So those jobs aren't going away. But if there's going to be a transfer, right, all of that inefficiency that happens and the money that goes into the back pocket of a CEO, that goes away. And if there is going to be a transfer, I'd love to make sure that the jobs that we create in the future are jobs that are not about denying people healthcare that they need, but about providing them the healthcare that they need. And I think there's a tremendous growth opportunity for jobs if, in fact, we are able to welcome people who have been locked out of our healthcare system back in it as equal citizens for healthcare in this country. And that's what Medicare for All would do. So I believe that it's going to net create jobs, not take them away.
Dr. Abdul, if you don't mind, I'd just kind of like to go maybe a little too much in the weeds here, but I think it's important because I saw your appearance on the Majority Report podcast with Sam Cedar and Emma Vigeland, I think it was about a month ago. By the way, it's one of my favorite national progressive shows. And if you don't mind, I'm going to steal a question from them and ask it here for our listeners because I believe it is really an important one and a key one. As you said earlier, Democrats winning an election, okay, fine, but the voters want to know what's next. It's just not enough to say, hey, we're going to get in there to beat Trump. There's got to be what next for the working class. But it'll remain difficult to do anything meaningful for the voters, for the working class, without eliminating the Senate filibuster rules. So would you be an advocate for filibuster reform as a senator?
Yes. I mean, the filibuster has been an anti-democratic tool that has been used to drag the worst of our history into our future. So I believe in abolishing the filibuster because I believe that only when all of the Senate is forced to take votes, right, forced to take votes that might be uncomfortable, can the democratic process actually work. And right now, the chokehold that has existed over the Senate has kept us from being able to pass really meaningful legislation. And even if we can't pass it, I want the good voters in every state to know where their senator stands rather than cowering behind one filibuster. And so I think the filibuster is fundamentally anti-democratic. I would be a huge proponent of abolishing it.
I think you bring up a great point, too, because it is a really good way in the Senate to allow certain senators to hide from taking those controversial votes or hiding behind an issue or something like that if they don't want to get on the front of it.
Exactly.
So I agree with you. Speaking of abolishing, you remain the only one in this Michigan Democratic primary race to call for ICE to be abolished. Your opponents, Congresswoman Haley Stevens, State Senator Mallory McMorrow, they're calling for reforms like, you know, that we're seeing the Democratic minority in the Senate pushing for right now as we are currently in this partial government shutdown. So, you know, maybe there are some people asking, all right, doctor, why isn't reforming this agency enough for you?
No, I'm the only person in this race who's actually led government agencies. I understand that there's a difference between strategy and culture. And if you ever only thought about government in abstract ways, you might not appreciate the fact that once a culture of impunity sets into an agency, it is not possible to change that culture. The rot at the heart of ICE, that is core deep. And I don't think that you can just reform it. I mean, ask yourself this question. This is an agency that has been given an insane budget, higher than the budget of the FBI, higher than the budget of the Marines. They've been allowed to cover their faces. They've been allowed to carry heavy weaponry on peaceful streets. They've been told that if they kill people, that the answer from their leadership is going to be one of ours, all of yours. They've used children as bait. How do you reform that exactly, right? Like, is there going to be a training that you take in a slide deck where they tell you that, you know, if you see a child and you want to use the child as bait, like, don't do that? At some point, you cannot reform something that should be so clear in the first place. And it's kind of like when black mold sets into a house. You're not going to be able to get the mold out. What you need is a new house. And so I believe that we can keep our southern border safe and secure. I believe even that you can enforce civil immigration policy. But this ain't it. When you're killing people, when you're carrying heavy machinery into peaceful streets, when you've been weaponized as a paramilitary force used to normalize the use of paramilitary force on streets, this cannot be reformed. It needs to be abolished, and we need to start from scratch.
Is there anything that you think you could do as a senator to try to, I don't know, I guess, limit the amount of so-called detention centers that are popping up here in Michigan?
I think right now we need to make sure that we're pulling back on that funding in the first place, right? And as a U.S. senator, I want to hold accountable this agency to every step, every letter of the law I possibly can until we finally do defund and abolish this agency that is not purpose fit for any purpose that we have in our government, right? I just want to be clear about something. Immigration law is civil law. It is not the kind of criminal law that we enforce with guns, right? Civil law is like paying your parking ticket. Right. And so imagine some masked man with a rifle ran up on you every time you got a parking ticket. This would not be the America that we know it to be. And so, you know, you can enforce immigration policy, but this is not about enforcing immigration policy. This is about normalizing paramilitary force. And these detention centers, $38 billion. Ask yourself what else we could do with $38 billion of funding. Ask yourself what it would mean if we spent $38 billion of funding on our schools, or on our roads and our bridges, or on our healthcare. Right now, we are watching our government misuse our taxpayer dollars to normalize paramilitary force on our streets, and it's not using them to solve the problems that we really do actually have in our society. And these detention centers, they're just another example of that.
Not to switch it up here, but I don't know if you saw recently, but Democratic Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, who, you know, could be your colleague here a year from now, he said in an interview that he gave on some podcast, and I'll share it with everybody. I'll give a link to it wherever you're listening. But he said that you, doctor, and others who were part of the uncommitted vote during the Michigan presidential primary last year, that you guys helped deliver Michigan for Trump.
Early on, I predicted that more and more part of my party is going to back away from Israel through it, because parts of our base became preoccupied in describing it as a genocide and using those kind of terms, which just was never true. And, you know, choosing to pander in parts of my party through that, and that what came out of Michigan you know, the uncommitted ones. And one of the people behind that, they're running for the Senate right now. You know, someone that was saying, don't vote for Kamala Harris. And people like Tlaib and them helped deliver Trump to Michigan.
What would you say to Senator Fetterman in response?
I endorsed Vice President Harris. I endorsed Vice President Harris after I endorsed the uncommitted movement. And frankly, I'm proud of both of those stances. The Biden administration's handling of the situation in Gaza was horrific. We watched tens of thousands of people die, people dislocated from their homes and their schools and their universities and their hospitals bombed to smithereens. If you want to understand why this administration has been elected, the question I would ask people like John Fetterman is, where were you when you could have held our administration or that administration, the Biden administration, accountable to its foundational failure? Now, I endorsed Vice President Harris because after President Biden was no longer the nominee, I understood that whether you saw this from the eyes of a child in Gaza or the eyes of a child in Detroit, that Trump would have been way worse and Harris would have been way better. And I spent a very, very painful several months trying to both talk sense into the Harris campaign about why they needed to switch tack from Biden's terrible handling and to talk sense to the Arab and Muslim community about why it is so critical that we protect people from the likes of Donald Trump ever coming to office again. And clearly that failed. But when you think about John Fetterman and his approach, this idea that somehow Israel can do no harm, that our taxpayer dollars are better spent dropping bombs on other people's children rather than investing in schools and hospitals in places like Pennsylvania or Michigan, I ask why that's to the benefit of anybody in Pennsylvania or Michigan. And I ask why it is that he failed to have any sort of moral courage. It's pointing backwards and saying that it was folks who were willing to stand up for a foreign policy that had our money spent here at home rather than dropping bombs on other people's kids. I don't understand any framework of democratic policymaking that suggests that we should be subsidizing foreign militaries in the first place, subsidizing bombs dropped on other people's children, rather than investing in towns where people can barely struggle to afford the basic means of a dignified life, whether that is in central Pennsylvania where he's from, or it's all over Michigan where I'm from.
You know, a big reason that I'm supporting your campaign is something that you've talked about, not just on here, but you've made it plain to everybody on the campaign trail that you're not taking, as you said, corporate PAC money that includes like DTE or Consumers Energy money here in Michigan, or the powerful American-Israeli PAC is known as APAC, like John Fetterman is accepting. But for me, the Epstein files have shown not only, I think, how sick it was for all these billionaires and powerful political elites to have done business with a known child predator and child sex trafficker, but for me, it also revealed, and I think for many Americans, how interconnected this elite class really is and how invincible that they feel due to the power that they possess. And this is why I think now more than ever, a candidate with a true working class populist platform is what the voters are craving, because they aren't feeling heard and they feel like they're just made to play by different rules each and every day. Are you getting that same sensation, you think, from the working class here in Michigan?
Absolutely. Across the communities I've had the opportunity to visit, people understand that they're getting a bum deal because their system has been rigged. Corporations spend huge amounts of money to elect public officials. Those public officials turn around and do the bidding of those corporations. And all the money they make comes out of somebody's back pocket. Turns out it's probably yours or mine. That system has to end. And I understood back in 2018 how corrupting that system was. So I've never taken corporate money. Right? I'm running against two other Democrats. When we were running in 2018 altogether, the corporation spent money to help elect them and to try to beat me. And that tells you whose side I'm going to be on. I don't believe you can serve two masters. At the end of the day, we choose. Do we serve the corporations who've been rigging the system against the people, or do we serve the people themselves? I have no intention of serving any corporation. I'm intending to serve the people. And so I'm never going to take money from those corrupting corporations and their lobbyists and their PACs. And that means that I can show up, I can call things how I see it, and I can fight for the people.
All right. Before I let you go, I think I saw that you're going to be making an appearance with State Representative Kerry Reingans for a healthcare town hall in Ann Arbor here soon.
Yeah. So we'll be talking about Medicare for All. She's been advancing the MyCare bill, a state level single payer bill. Obviously, I've been a longtime advocate for Medicare for All, wrote a whole book on it. And we're going to be talking about how we actually take on the power of the large corporations who have been nickel and diming us at every turn. The fight for guaranteed health care from cradle to grave, no premiums, copays, or deductibles. I hope folks will join us. And if folks want to learn more about the campaign itself, I hope you'll follow me on socials at Abdul Al Sayed or check us out at AbdulForSenate.com. If you can, I don't take corporate money, so I rely on tens of thousands of people giving us $5, $10, $15. I hope folks will check us out, offer us some support. We are fighting a righteous fight, and it's a fight that we fight together, right? There is no one single person that is responsible for a campaign. It's a movement of people. And so the other thing I'm hoping folks will do is sign up to volunteer. You can do that at our website. We need you out there knocking on doors, having conversations that are at the core of our democracy. So we look forward to working together.
All right. Michigan Democratic candidate for the United States Senate, Dr. Abdul El-Sayed. Thanks so much for spending time with us here this week. And I'd love to have you back on again before the August primary. All right. And also stay on offense. Okay.
We will. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you having us on. Looking forward to coming on again soon and maybe even joining you in Gratiot County.
This must be a progressive podcast because we believe in freedom, facts, and democracy here. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If the show's not enough, visit Left of Lansing on YouTube and make sure to like and subscribe there as well. Now, back to the show with the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Special thanks to Dr. Abdul El-Sayed for appearing on the show here this week. That was awesome. And giving his vision of the America that he wants to see and how he will stand up for the working class here in Michigan. I will provide links to his campaign as well as links to that healthcare town hall that he's doing with good friend of the show and strong progressive state representative Kerry Ryan Gans from Ann Arbor. And, you know, I was thinking about it, too. I'll be asking Representative Ryan Gans to come back on here for a visit probably later on in the spring months as she's been pretty busy in the state legislature, to say the least, but she also did announce her backing for Dr. Abdul a while ago. And as we are talking about healthcare for all and the broken healthcare system we have here in the United States, I came across this story from MLive's Justin Hicks describing how a nurse in Michigan has decided to go without insurance, even though she's got high blood pressure and other ailments, all because the MAGA Republican Congress refused to okay those extensions for the Affordable Care Act. And for all of those Senate centrist Democrats who yelled at us, lectured us, and even mocked us after we criticized them for voting to end the government shutdown last year before getting a vote to extend those subsidies, yeah, you understand why Democratic voters are pissed at the Democratic Party leadership right now. And you're understanding why voters are seeking massive, massive changes. So it's estimated some 34,000 Michiganders are choosing to drop their insurance this year since the costs are out of control. And when we talk about affordability, this isn't sustainable for the working class. And it seems to me, you know, having a more concrete system in place like Medicare for All is kind of a logical step. It would at least provide a basic floor of coverage for millions out there, and it would be cheaper and more efficient. It would also provide millions in the working class extra cash to buy other essentials. It would free up the corporate business community from paying high insurance costs for their workers, and workers wouldn't feel trapped in their jobs because those jobs provide some kind of healthcare coverage. It doesn't have to be that way, and we can change it, but we need to not only push for it and advocate for it, but we've got to put the right kinds of people in office who will vote for it. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Journalist Molly Knight recently shared on her Blue Sky account how a YouGov poll showed that while support for ICE was at minus 25 for millennial voters, ICE still received a plus 5% for my generation, Generation X. And this was after the killings in Minneapolis last month. And that led Molly Knight to muse, is this all related to the United States banning lead paint in houses in 1978? Well, fair enough. I mean, I don't believe so entirely, but fair enough. Interestingly enough, the support for ICE by baby boomers, Gen X's parents for the most part, was at minus 9%. So the generation we've been ripping apart since we were kids, the ones who, you know, as George Carlin mocked back in the 90s, went from all you need is love to whoever has the most toys wins. That generation is showing more sense and fight against the Trump regime's ICE Gestapo than we Gen Xers are doing at this time. And this coincides with other polls showing how the older that my fellow Gen Xers age, the older that we get, the more authoritarian we've become, which is freaking insane considering we grew up with Rage Against the Machine, Public Enemy, Tupac, The Clash, Mellencamp, and while he may have also been a boomer, we also heard Bruce's songs on the radio. When did we become Rage with the oligarchy, with the Epstein class? When did we become like Gordon Gekko. I mean, he asked Bud Fox in the Oliver Stone movie Wall Street. Now, you're not naive to think that we live in a democracy, do you, Bud? He wasn't the protagonist in that one. He wasn't the hero. I'm hoping many other Gen Xers got that message. How did we go from Smells Like Teen Spirit or when Alanis Morissette screamed that all she really wanted was a little justice to voting and siding with the billionaire tech bro Epstein class? I mean, in school, we all read Catcher in the Rye. Yes, I know it was a book from the 1950s, but we read it in school. How is it possible that we read that book and today don't look at Donald Trump as a phony? I mean, don't get me wrong. There are plenty of them out there, especially both sides of the party. You won't get me on the record saying that Chuck Schumer is Mr. Authenticity. But we grew up with Trump, and we understood him to be the buffoon he's always been. Hell, Back to the Future 2 sort of mocks him by showing the Biff character becoming rich and then acting and looking like Trump. We prided ourselves in not giving in to authority as being more open-minded and refusing to be like the older generations. Like Ali Sheedy says in The Breakfast Club, when you get older, the heart dies. We didn't want to be that way. How did we go from Tracy Chapman singing about a revolution for the working class to a point where we say, yes, yes, Bobby Kennedy Jr. is the kind of guy we need running this nation's healthcare system? What? Or, you know, another TV phony like Dr. Oz lecturing us how we should become healthier, not for just ourselves or for our families, but healthier so that way we could work longer for the corporate class. How did we go from laughing at Mr. Burns to voting for Mr. Burns? We pride ourselves on being the last generation who could be alone, who were the latchkey kids, who could take care of ourselves, who our parents told us to make sure we were back home by dark as a way to teach us personal responsibility. Yet, we then grew up and voted for a guy and for a party who never takes responsibility for anything. We celebrated our sarcastic and ironic nature, but that was usually at the expense of punching up rather than punching down on people. In the classic boomer self-reflection movie called The Big Chill, and it's got some cringy parts, I agree, but one of the characters says to her lifetime friend, "What happened to you? What's wrong with you?" It was a sort of question for many disillusioned and lost boomers in the early 80s. Well, you know what? We could have the same questions for many of my Gen X cohorts here today. How did we watch Roots and then say, yes, let's get rid of any mentions of the evil of slavery? We don't want anyone learning about that anymore. How did we go from Sesame Street to celebrating ICE Gestapo agents terrorizing a group of people who didn't screw us over like Mr. Burns and his crowd have screwed us over, the Epstein class? Yeah, we were cool back in the 90s admitting how reality bites. Yeah, we understood that. But did that mean we just gave up? Did it? I didn't get that message. What happened to us? What's wrong with us?
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks to Dr. Abdul El-Sayed for joining the show here this week. The next senator of the state of Michigan, Abdul El-Sayed. Coming up next week, progressive state representative from Melvindale, Dylan Wagella, will return to the show to talk about the things he's been pushing in the legislature, like, for instance, trying to put more of a light on this data center push in the state. And then another great friend of the show, progressive state Democratic Senate candidate for the 38th District in the Upper Peninsula, Kelly Van Genhoven, will join us. Now, Kelly's got a list of victories in Delta County and is ready to push a strong, bold working class agenda to counter the failed anti-worker agenda of Michigan MAGA Republicans up there in the UP. But it seems like some in the state Democratic Party establishment are choosing to ignore Kelly's record of taking down the MAGA majority on the Delta County Board of Commissioners and then winning re-election in 2024, even though Delta County voted for Trump. Make it make sense. So we'll talk with Kelly about that and also how there's a mini civil war brewing between MAGA Republicans for that Senate race as well. Please subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever you are listening. Also, please sign the Invest in My Kids ballot initiative petition, which would force the DeVos and Epstein class here in Michigan to pay a tax to help fund our schools, funds that they depleted through years and years of MAGA Republican leadership. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.